The Tom Woods Show, episode 999.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey everybody, if you've ever considered starting your own podcast, the process can seem a little bit daunting. Well, check out tomwoods.com/podcast course to get a step-by-step overview of exactly what to do. It's a free podcast course at tomwoods.com/podcast course. Hey everybody, Tom Woods here. Today I want to play for you a little interview I did with a great guy, Professor Jared Casey, several years ago, just to get you pumped and ready for when he comes on the show next week. He's got a brand new book out, and it is a doozy. It is enormous, but what an accomplishment. It is a history of political thought from a libertarian perspective. Enormous, learned, scholarly, a thrill to read, brilliant. David Gordon, who's the smartest guy in the world, says it's the best work of its kind. Amazing. So we're going to have Professor Casey on to talk about that next week. But in this clip, I'm talking to him about his book, Libertarian Anarchy, Against the State. Professor Casey is Professor Emeritus of Philosophy at University College Dublin, and he also teaches for LibertyClassroom.com, which you will hear discussed in our conversation. So if you want to learn from him directly and be able to ask him your questions, well, LibertyClassroom.com is the place to go. All right, here is... before I do that, this is episode 999. Now, I know you guys know arithmetic. You add one to that, that's 1,000. But tomorrow will not be episode 1,000 because I'm recording episode 1,000 at an event on September 30th. We had to postpone it until September 30th because of the hurricane. So I'm going to skip over episode 1,000. Tomorrow will be 1,001. And then once we get the live recording and we get episode 1,000 done, then we'll go back and insert it where episode 1,000 belongs. So that's what's going on. So make sure you check your feed for this podcast to make sure you don't miss episode 1000, which is going to be fantastic with special guests and a lot of fun. And it's absolutely free to attend. So check out the details and register, please. Register at tomwoods.com/Orlando. Now for my conversation with Jared Casey.
Hi, everybody. It's Tom Woods. I'm here with Professor Jared Casey of University College Dublin. Professor Casey is the author of numerous titles, but we're going to be talking today about this one, Libertarian Anarchy Against the State. Professor Casey, glad to have you.
Very good to be here, Tom.
All right, so what in the heck is libertarian anarchy?
Well, if I was to be flippant, I would say it's a title designed to annoy my friends and enemies.
I'm sure it has had that effect.
Well, I like to be subtle about these things, so I thought I'd kind of sneak up on people.
With a subtle title. Yeah.
Yeah, and I put in the subtitle, especially just in case they were confused.
They weren't understanding. Okay.
No, it's as they say in the TV ads, it does what it says on the tin. It says, this is what I think is the ideal political system or ethical system that we should have in society, the way in which we should organize our affairs. It should be anarchic, that is to say, we shouldn't be forced to obey orders from people above us, unless we've actually consented to do so. And it's libertarian because I take the basic political principle to be freedom. In other words, that in order to be the kinds of people that we are, in order, in fact, to have any ethical or political responsibility at all, we have to be free. And you put those two together, you get libertarian anarchy.
Now, this is quite a shocking doctrine to many delicate ears, right? You were to say this to people, the initial response, even to, among people who say, I favor freedom, I favor the free market, it's always, but, we need coercion for this, we need coercion for that, this can't work, and warlords would take over and all that. So what do you do to try to get people to think outside the box a little bit, to be willing to take an unconventional view and consider it seriously?
You're right. I mean, you do get the standard buts. I wrote a short article, which I, to some extent, incorporated into the book, which is designed to be totally rebuttal. In other words, to rebut the buts. But perhaps one of the most effective ways to deal with the objections is to say, look, examine your daily life. The life you live from moment to moment with other people in your college or your school or business, your friends, your families, and you will realize that almost everything you do for almost every moment of the day is anarchic. That is to say, it's not mad and it's not crazy and it's not ruleless, but is governed by rules which are not enforced from the top down. So the main thing you have to dissuade people of is that anarchy means bug-eyed people with needles hanging out of their arms and drunk all the day, lying around or storming buildings or throwing bombs. That's not what I mean by anarchy at all. That's not what I think anybody who reflects on this means. We anarchists, this is going to sound awfully boring and dull. I mean, I hope it doesn't dissuade any of your listeners or viewers from looking at the book. But anarchists, I'm all in favor of rules and rule-governed conduct and so on. I just want those rules to be the rules that we ourselves have evolved and agreed to, not rules that somebody else has thought up for our benefit. From the anarchist point of view, the current political system we have really is effectively a system of externalizing our parents. Just as your parents, if you like, know what's best for you, or at least we think they do, rightly or wrongly, when you're growing up. So the state effectively is your parents writ large. It's largely staffed by people who think, for some strange reason, I don't quite know why, that they know better than you do what's good for you. So for the best of all possible motives in most cases, and perhaps not so in all cases, they insist on telling you what you can and what you cannot do. And while I was very happy to have parents, when I was growing up, who looked after me in this way, I think I've got to the stage in my life where I'm actually able to take care of myself. And I think all adults are in that same situation.
But isn't the state, doesn't it come into existence to promote the common good, right? It's there to provide peace and order and the rules governing the marketplace. And sure, we like the free market and so on and so forth, but wouldn't we need this basic framework provided indeed coercively? Because, well, look, you can't be an extremist. You can't insist absolutely on your two or three libertarian principles. You have to accede to reality at some level. So we need the basic framework provided by the state. Like, what do you say to that? That's the most common objection, isn't it?
Well, I think that's a very good objection. The only problem is it confuses two things. One, law, and two, the state. They're not the same thing. We do need law. Law is the framework of regulations and rules which allow us to flourish. And I would think of law as a major, if not the major constituent of the common good. But the state is not the only or indeed the best way of providing law. In fact, the state only gets into the law business relatively late. For most of human history, laws have been made by custom and habit in society. And even up to quite recently, for example, in the common law tradition, law was effectively made by judges on the basis of cases. The state, in terms of making law, or the idea of a legislator, that is a specific body elected to make laws, is actually a revolutionary and a novel idea. So human beings do need laws, and anarchists are not opposed to law. That's the major point. We are, however, opposed to the idea that the only sensible or the best way to have laws is to have the state make laws. In fact, once the state gets into the lawmaking business, you get very arbitrary laws, you get laws that change all the time, and you get laws that impinge upon your freedom.
Well, what about the objection that maybe in the old days when you had a primitive society, you could get by with a system like this. But now that society has become so complex, well, surely we need a monopolistic source of law in order to impose order on what would otherwise be chaos.
Well, that would be a really strong objection if it wasn't actually falsified by the historical facts. Always the problem. In fact, the system I've described is effective if you take the common law system, which you have in England, in the UK and in Ireland, and to a large extent, with the exception of, Louisiana, I think, in the United States.
Yep.
The very few statutes were passed, for example, in England in the 16th century, rather more, but still very few in the 17th century, and some more, but still very few in the 18th century. It's not effectively until the middle of the 19th century that statute law, the making of law by the legislator, becomes the norm. And even then, it's largely a matter of codifying existing common law rules, which are already there. I mean, the legislation, as we now know, the avalanche of legislation that we have in all of our countries, unfortunately, is effectively a 20th century phenomenon. So it's not like primitive society, right? 2,500 BC, 1,000 BC, you know, Middle Ages, Dark Ages. We're talking about something as recent as 100-120 years ago.
But also, I think as society becomes more complex, that's actually an argument against having the state be involved in making all the rules and so on and so forth, because the state is a very, you know, lumbering, clumsy institution. And here we have this super fast, lightning fast type of society, and everything it does, it's always 3 weeks behind. And moreover, when you think about some of the problems related to the internet, you look at eBay or PayPal and some of the other institutions, the way they've managed to, in the absence really of the state, to regulate themselves, to protect people against bad sellers or buyers whose payments aren't reliable and That's so right. on. They've just done this.
They've done this and have every incentive to do it. And of course, you have the standard information problem. In other words, even assuming that those people in charge of the state were blessed with intelligence, okay, not always the case, okay, were blessed with good intentions and a good will, not always the case, but let's assume for the sake of the argument that that was the case, they still wouldn't be able to assimilate, process the information, order it, and then make their laws to fit, if you like, all of the data. By the time they get around to making the law, the data has changed and shifted. The law that's made by the legislators is crude, generally inefficient, draconian, cutting off people's legs, metaphorically, right. So that they can, it's just not flexible enough. People, when they have serious things to do, when they want to trade or to buy or to sell or whatever it is they're doing, will in fact find ways to do it and find ways to do it efficiently, will protect themselves against fraud as best they can. There are always rough areas and so on. But nonetheless, as you say, the internet is a special case. I mean, it looks crazy that you would actually give somebody your credit card over the internet. I mean, why would you do that? Look, I mean, you're going to run up a $50,000 bill. Well, no, because we have reputational ways of controlling that. And that, of course, is the basis, for example, of the entire commercial law code. The commercial law code, by the way, which was adopted wholesale by English contract lawyers in the latter part of the 19th century. Okay, and we still provide the basis of English contract law.
Okay, so if I understand you correctly, then you are taking the type of analysis that we would hear from a free market person, that person would apply to milk subsidies and the reason they don't work, and they would apply this analysis to all these different aspects of society. And you're saying this analysis, the free marketeers are just not going far enough. It applies to everything in society. It applies to every service, so-called, the government provides. The same critical analysis can be turned against all these different sorts of things. Is that right?
Okay. No, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Now, you've been teaching this as a course at University College Dublin, right? This general subject. Is it a graduate course?
I teach it at both levels, at upper level undergraduate and then graduate.
Okay. Have you had any students' heads explode talking about this material? I mean, what's the most common response you get when you come in and tell them this stuff?
The response, it varies from almost instant conversion, believe it or not, in the case of some students who are so fascinated by it, by that at the end of the first lecture, they've almost, turned over completely, to horror, barely concealed horror and shock and disbelief. You cannot be serious, to use the words of John McEnroe. You cannot be serious, okay, as he would say. And it makes for a very entertaining class at both undergraduate and graduate level. But it's funny to see people shift and people change, and some people get stuck in one part and another part, and every time I teach this class, it's different because the objections are different, the sticking points are different, what people find objectionable is different, and I can never tell how it's going to go. That's what makes it so wonderful.
Right, right. Well, before we finish, let's switch gears just a minute and talk about logic.
Logic.
Now, so I've got this website, libertyclassroom.com, and I ask people who are my subscribers, what course would you like to see next? We have U.S. history, which I teach, and the idea is to teach the courses the way they should have gotten them in university, but they probably didn't. Give them the real truth, right? Yeah. So I was amazed that so many people said, we want a course on logic, because we have economics, economics, we have all. So I thought they would want money and banking. I thought they'd want all sorts of other things, World War II, whatever. They were demanding logic. So I said, well, who can do logic? If that's what the people want, that's what I'm going to give them. So I brought you on board because you've been teaching logic for how many years?
Maybe about 30 years.
30 years. Okay. So I thought you'd be pretty good to do this. So you did a wonderful logic course for us. And I can see from the discussion forums, we have people going through your lectures. Yeah. Your course is hard to listen to in the car. You have to sit at the computer for your course. But most of the courses
are listening. Please don't do the exercises in the car.
This one you have to sit down for. But I mean, give us, what's the 60-second pitch for why? I mean, can't I form good arguments and detect bad ones without being formally trained?
Yes, you can. is the short answer. And so what do I need the logic course for is the next one. And the answer is because logic allows you to effectively get a grip on what it is that you're doing when you do what you do naturally, so that you can do it better, more surely, and more accurately, with the certainty that you've got the right hold on things. Otherwise, you're always slightly nervous. You're always slightly
unsure
that something is coming around your back here. Now, logic is not the be-all and the end-all. Let me make this point absolutely clear. In other words, it's a starting point when you're doing when you're writing your papers or when you're analyzing. And that's one thing I would say in its favor, that once you've even done some elementary logic, it's kind of like an intellectual self-defense course. It allows you to read a paper and to take control of it, of your reading, in a way that you don't normally do if you haven't done logic. You know, sometimes when you're a beginning undergraduate, you read a paper and you go, oh, that's great. And then you read a paper which is arguing the exact opposite. You go, oh, that's great too. And you're always at the mercy, as it were, of the prevailing wind. Okay. Right. Logic allows you to say, what exactly is being said? What's the conclusion? What's the evidence being presented for it? How does it relate? Where are the strong and weak points in this? And so it makes your reading more productive. Okay, it makes it more accurate and it enables you to get to the point much more quickly. It also enables you to construct your papers better. Okay, so that now that you're constructing it with an eagle eye, as it were, to yourself as the reader, you can construct your paper so that you can defend it against obvious objections. You don't make, you know, embarrassing mistakes.
Well, I'm going to link we're going to have a page up, libertyclassroom.com/Casey. Where you can find more resources on what we've been talking about. If it intrigues you, I'll have your book linked there, Libertarian Anarchy right here, and some other links like to Rothbard's Anatomy of the State. We'll put all that up there at libertyclassroom.com/Casey. And of course, if you want to study alongside Professor Casey, his logic course has been gone through by many cool people. Thousands of people are over at libertyclassroom.com. So make sure and join us there. Indeed. And Professor Casey, thanks for the chat.
Thank you very much.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Now, how's this for a podcast? There's a new podcast called Don't Waste Your Hate. It's a libertarian podcast. You can check it out at don'twasteyourhate.com. The premise of it is that the state more or less encourages us to hate different groups or to blame our problems on all kinds of different groups when the state itself really is the source of our problems. So, for example, we're supposed to be upset at price gougers when the real problem is the state's restriction on allowing prices to fluctuate. So it tries to get us to direct our unhappiness at the wrong source. So don'twasteyourhate.com is the home of the Don't Waste Your Hate podcast, which is trying to encourage people to look to the right place. If they're going to be upset about something, if they're going to be outraged at injustice, well, make sure you pinpoint the source, the correct source of the injustice. So check that out. Don'twasteyourhate.com. I'll link to it at tomwoods.com/999, as the listener website mentioned. And of course, remember, you get your website mentioned and therefore a flood of traffic. No tumbleweeds when you launch your site if you use my link to get your hosting. And when you use my link to get your hosting, you also get the best price that Bluehost has, so that's also good. So I give you this, plus some tutorials, membership in my private bloggers group. Get all the details about how you can get all this nice stuff at tomwoods.com/publicity. Now, next week, man, do we have some fun stuff coming up next week. I mean, yes, I have an episode tomorrow, but next week, it's going to be a ton of fun. I got two authors coming on, each of whom will be on the release date of the book they've just written. So, for example, Brian McClanahan will be on Monday to talk about his book, How Alexander Hamilton Screwed Up America, being released on that day. Then on Tuesday, we'll have Chris Guillebeau back for his third appearance on the show, and that's the release date for his new book, Side Hustle. We're going to get Dave Smith back on, the great libertarian comedian who currently has the number one comedy album on all of iTunes, Dave Smith Libertas. So I'm going to do my best to get him back on. Jeff Herbener is going to come on and join us to talk about this question. Are our children really going to be worse off than we were? Which is the refrain everybody takes for granted, that the kids are going to be worse off. Is that really true? Is that necessarily a home run? So we're going to talk about that. And then, of course, Jared Casey to talk about his brand new book. So much great stuff coming up. So do please subscribe to the show on iTunes or Stitcher. And if you're getting value from the show, then I urge you to consider becoming a supporting listener of the show. You get lots and lots and lots of benefits when you become one, including transcripts of all the interviews, plus membership in my private Facebook group, but many, many other benefits as well. And you can go to the special dinner before my 1,000th episode event and get a free dinner as just part of your membership. So lots of neat stuff that you can check out at supportinglisteners.com, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.